Right now, promises to the dead. September the 11th is a date with profound meaning in Chile, as well as the United States. On that day in 1973, a military coup toppled the elected government of leftist Salvador Allende. Thousands of his supporters were rounded up, tortured, and disappeared. Ariel Dorfman worked as a cultural and press official for Allende, but managed to escape the country. His decisions on September the 11th, his guilt and the loneliness of exile, and the burden of telling the story of the missing are the subject of a new documentary film called A Promise to the Dead. In one scene, Dorfman speaks with a group of mothers, daughters, and wives of the disappeared, and then watches as one widow begins to dance.
The national dance of Chile is la cueca, and the cueca is between a man and a woman, in which one is the rooster, the other is the hen. And this is the cueca sola, meaning the woman is dancing without the man. She's dancing with only the shadow of the man, and its absence is the sense of the dance.
A scene from Peter Raymond's movie, A Promise to the Dead. If you have questions for Ariel Dorfman about what happened in Chile and about his life as an exile or life as an exile, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. Playwright, professor, and author Ariel Dorfman joins us from Duke University Studios in Durham, North Carolina. And it's nice to talk with you again.
Hello, Neil. It's nice to talk to you again.
And it's just before that scene where that woman is dancing, as you describe her. You are talking with these women about how when you first left Chile, you found yourself unable to speak and unable to write.
Yes, I was devoured by silence. When I left at the end of 1973, I felt that guilt was sort of assaulting my throat. It was paralyzing me. I wasn't allowing me to speak. And, I mean, it was terrible because I had left Chile precisely because to be outside in exile is to be free to say what you want, whereas the people in Chile were under this terrible dictatorship. So it was doubly terrible for me to feel that I was not fulfilling the reason why I had gone out. I had gone out in order to speak, to write, and I couldn't. And as I tell these mothers and sisters and the women of the disappeared, it was when I began hearing their voices in Chile resisting General Pinochet, resisting the dictatorship, and when I began to hear somehow the voice of the dead themselves calling out and demanding in some way to be heard, that I began to write, and I haven't stopped since. I've looked back, let's say, but I've been looking back, and I've been writing since, ever since.
It's interesting. A lot of this goes back to, as I said, you were an official in the presidential palaces there under Salvador Allende, and when the bombing attack came, the Air Force attack on the presidential palace on September the 11th, you were supposed to have been there.
I was supposed to have been there. You know, I explained it at greater length in my memoir, Heading South, Looking North. But in A Promise of the Dead, I also sort of, in this film that Peter Raymond has done, I also looked at this rather carefully. Basically, they were supposed to call me. In fact, the first thing that happened is that I was supposed to be there that night, the night of September 10th at night. It's like saying I was supposed to have a meeting, a breakfast meeting at the Twin Towers. That's the sort of thing. I was supposed to be there, right? So it was either September 10th, and I was supposed to take the phone call that would have told Allende, would have told me to call Allende and tell him that the coup had begun, that the military takeover had begun. Instead, I changed and shifted with somebody else. He took my shift. He took my place. And, of course, he died. He was terribly tortured. He was disappeared. We still haven't found his body. His name is Claudio Jimeno. You know, he was a very close friend of mine. And I survived. But also, they were supposed to call me at 6 in the morning when the coup began, and they were supposed to say, Ariel, you've got to come to the Moneda. You're needed. This is your place, right? And I had on purpose put myself in that place because I didn't want to leave Chile. I had left Argentina when I was a kid of 2. I had left the United States when I was a young you know, kid of 12 and a half. And it was time for me to stay in one place and never leave again. That's what I sort of said to myself. So I chose to accept the job of working with Allende, then working with his chief of staff in the presidential palace. But it turned out that nobody called me. And many years later, I found out that the list had been passed to the chief of staff of Allende, and he had said, yes, call all these people except this one. It crossed my name off. And when they asked, I asked him many years later, why he had crossed my name off. Of all the names, of all the, those who didn't, all those others didn't survive, the people who were called, he said, somebody had to live to tell the story. By then, I sort of had figured it out myself, mm-hmm. that's what I had to do. I had to tell the story. Now, you don't only tell the story of survival. You do it in many different ways. You do it in many with many subtleties. I did it in Death and the Maiden, my play. I did it in many ways. Mm-hmm. You do it addressing the complexity. And taking the case of Chile and the way in which it reacted, the consequences of the coup, the way it deformed our national character, the way those human rights violations destroyed us, contaminated us, you take that to the world. And you use it so the rest of the world can look in the mirror of Chile and say, oh, maybe there's something to learn here. And the film we just opened at Toronto International Film Festival is very much about that. It's very much about what you do when a terrible trauma, a terrible crisis hits your society. When terror hits your society, do you militarize your society? Do you humanize your society? Do you use that crisis to grow, or do you use that crisis to withdraw into yourself and really become fearful? And those are major questions for our time.
And another point you make about the other September the 11th, but I wanted to get back to that first September the 11th. You and your wife drive downtown, and there's a moment you get out of the car, and there's a way that you could have gone down to the Moneda, to the presidential palace there.
Yes.
And you don't.
Yeah, what happened was that I tried to go down there because I was crazy. I mean, as a fool, I wanted to die in some sense. Because there was this cult of the martyr, you know, but also the idea of living for the revolution. I'd said I was going to live and die for a democratic revolution, and I didn't want to stay alive. And I wanted to defend the president, defend democracy. And so we drove down there. There was a police barricade, and the policeman said, well, you can't pass. And I said, but if I go around, you can't stop me. He says, well, I can't stop you, but it's at your own risk. Mm-hmm. And I turn at that moment, you know. I turned and I see Angelica back there in that tiny little car.
Your wife, yes.
My wife, yes, I'm sorry. My wife was there, you know, and I see her and that's life there. And I look down this enormous avenue and you can hear the bombs falling and the shots being fired and people dying and screams and you hear all that. And in one sense, you know, I think I was afraid because, you know, we all fear death in some sense. In another sense, no. It was a decision to go for life. I mean, to live for life, to live for, instead of dying, you know, for the dead, living for the dead in some sense. And it was, what happened at that moment was sort of important because till then, somebody else had crossed my name off a list. Somebody else had changed the shift with me. Somebody else had said to me, oh, why don't you just do some other thing on September 11th in the morning? It was a series of fortuitous circumstances that kept me alive. But at that moment, it was my decision. I was there at the crossroads. And what always comes back to me when I get to that place and what appears in the film, of course, is I wasn't only choosing to live, I was also choosing exile. I was choosing the one thing I didn't want. I wanted to live and die. I wanted my children to be buried, my grandchildren to be buried, myself to be buried in the same place where I had lived all my life. And that was not going to happen. I mean, here I am in the United States, you know, telling the story to you in English mm-hmm. instead of speaking to somebody in Spanish in Chile. And I don't regret that because I think it made me a better writer and a deeper human being. But the loss was quite grievous. The loss of your country, the loss of your friends, the loss of everyday life, the loss of you know, Dante speaks about how the bread of exile is very special because it had no salt in it, because there was salt in the bread of Florence. Mm-hmm. Well, that sort of thing was happening to me all the time. And so I have that feeling of loss. At the same time, you know, exile means that you've gained lots of things. You've gained the world, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you've lost your country in some sense.
Let's get some listeners involved in the conversation. We're speaking with Ariel Dorfman, professor of literature and Latin American studies at Duke and the author of many plays, including Death and the Maiden, as he mentioned, which, of course, was made into a film, and the subject of the new film, A Promise to the Dead, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. And let's start with Shell. Shell's with us from Chicago.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Thanks. Good afternoon. Professor Dorfman, the question for you is, which lessons, if any, do you think you could give progressives of the left here or anywhere else, based not so much on your personal experience, though obviously that it's included, but on the policies of the government that got overthrown?
Well, you know, there were mistakes made, and I recognize them, by the government of Salvador Allende. And I always say that the fundamental mistake that was made was, and I say it in this film as well, and I say it in this book, Heading South, Looking North, you cannot change radically a society unless you have 70 or 80% of the people with you. I mean, you know, you can win an election with 51% of the people. In fact, you can very often win the election with 45%. But you can't make radical, very, very deep structural changes if you only have a certain group of, let's say, a bare majority of the people. That's the first thing. And the second thing that I sort of affirm and reaffirm over and over again, because it's the way we got rid of Pinochet, is I think that one must engage very, very actively in nonviolence. And I think that the one thing that has kept us alive during these years is that we refuse to engage in violence as a response to the violence inflicted upon us. In other words, I would say those are the two most important. One is you have to have a large alliance of people. You have to create a great consensus in your society of the changes that are needed. You really need that. The second is you have to do it by struggling very strongly and very peacefully for what you believe in. I think you need more courage to be nonviolent than to be violent, to tell you the truth. Those would be sort of the two things that I get out of that, you know, as an experience or the experience that I think we can draw out of the Allende Revolution's failure and frustration.
Thanks a lot. That's very interesting.
Shell, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye.
Ariel Dorfman is the subject of A Promise to the Dead, a film by Peter Raymond. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And now let's get Jack on the line. Jack's with us from Tallahassee in Florida.
Yeah. Can you hear me all right?
Yep. Go ahead, Jack.
Okay, Jack. My name is Jack. Mr. Dorfman's and Talk of the Nation's great. Listen, let me tell you a little bit about myself. I'm the son of a Chilean, and I'm from Florida. And I found out by searching online that my family has been pro-Pinochet. And that's kind of an embarrassment for me because, frankly, I'm not that person. I believe in nonviolence. I believe in peace, and we can all get along. But I also, through some research, have found that there's quite a bit of Germans after World War II moved to Chile, and there's communities where they speak nothing but German. And when I went down there once many years ago, the only hotel that could take us was a Hotel Von Schroeder, and I could hear German music in the background. I could almost hear these footsteps, the people doing the goose step down in the basement. Either way, I'm wondering now, today, in contemporary Chile, what is the emotion, what is the sentiment with what happened and how we're going to move forward, how Chileans are going to move forward in their government.
Mm-hmm. All right, absolutely. Well, let me answer this in two parts. First of all, I just want to say about Germans. Today, when there were a series of anti-immigrant riots in Germany a few years back, hundreds of thousands of Germans, went into the streets to defend the Muslims, the Turks, the Moroccans, etc., to say we will not allow this to happen again. So I think it's time for us to not listen to goose steps anymore in relation to the Germans, though, of course, that's part of their history, but to listen to the steps of the young people of Germany who are fighting for democracy and fighting for peace in their backyard. In no other place in the world do people do that. I just want to say that about Germany, simply. You know, I'm Jewish myself. You know, I lost people in the Holocaust. But I think it's very important that we say that.
Yes.
I would like to say that in this film, a very special moment happens because we went down there. It just so happened, either fate or coincidence or the same God that saved me, decided that Pinochet was going to have a heart attack and was going to die while we were there filming. And when he had the heart attack, We were filming, you know, and let's go to the military hospital where it's outside where he's having the heart attack. And Neil can tell you a little bit about that because he's seen it, the mm-hmm. scene. But there is a woman who is hysterically crying for her dying general, you know.
Wow.
And what I do is that instead of mocking her, she was really hysterical. You see the
indeed.
Film, you'll see. I mean, she's got dark glasses on. She's screaming, ah, oh, the general saved us, et cetera, you know. When all the cameras had gone, except the camera was following me, but those were the TV cameras, you know, when they'd all gone, when all the media had gone, I approached her very gently and I said, ma'am, I just want you to know that I've been an opponent of General Pinochet all my life. And yet I understand the pain that you're feeling at this moment. Just like we had to mourn the death of Allende, you will have to mourn the death of Pinochet.
Right.
But I'm asking you that just like we recognize the errors, what I just did in my previous answer, you know, if we recognize the errors of Pinochet, can you please, I'm sorry, the errors of Allende. If we can recognize the errors of Allende in the past, can you recognize the terrors of Pinochet? Therefore, can you show towards us the same compassion that I'm showing towards you? Because there's an enormous wall between the supporters of Pinochet, which are around 30% of the population, 70% which are against Pinochet. And you cannot build that country except if you share with those people. Now, those people are supposedly my enemies, and yet I'm trying to disarm her at that moment, disarm her in the best possible ways, through peace, through gentleness, through listening to her, through speaking to her. And at the same time, in that same film, I have a confrontation with a right-wing, ultra-right-wing, person asking this congressperson, when did you know that they were torturing in Chile? Because until you tell me when you knew, and until you recognize that you knew it, and you prospered because of people being tortured, because others were howling in the darkness while you were smiling and quirking the champagne bottles, until that happens, I cannot trust you and you can't trust me. Mm. So really, my life and my work as a writer also, but also in this film, are an attempt to show what you do, how you break down that wall. Now, I'm not going to break down the wall by myself, but it's a model, it's an explanation, it's an attempt to jump over that wall and to suggest that the others, those who are on the other side, should also jump over their wall. That's the way to move forward, I think.
Ariel Dorfman, thanks very much. We appreciate your time today.
Thank you so much, Neil.
Ariel Dorfman, also author of Heading South, Looking North. The documentary A Promise to the Dead is being screened in cities across the country. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.